So Jesus is having a controversy with some good observers of Torah about Sabbath. This is a huge thing. Sabbath is absolutely central to the faith. So, what's going on here? Well, one of the things that's going on is, as we heard in some of the other texts in Deuteronomy, God said, I'm the one who brought you out of Egypt, out of bondage. The seventh day is a day for you to stop, remember, stop working hard to try to free yourselves. Remember that God liberated you, that I liberated you from the land of Egypt. It goes back even further than that also in other places where it talks about the idea that, remember when Adam and Eve, they took the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, and God was really upset about that, and God said, now from you will have to work hard for fruit to come out of the earth. Right? Futility will be a part of your life now. You'll work really hard, and you'll get briars and brambles. The Sabbath is like the down payment of a promise that futility, that captivity will come to an end eventually. That God will come and redeem the people. Futility and slavery will be no more. Every week, it's built right into the fabric of our week. Sabbath, remember the promise and live in it for one day. Don't work, don't fret, have joy. Kind of ingenious, isn't it? Really? Like, what? Remember, I don't know if we remember this promise that's coming. Okay, now comes Jesus, and here he is, and he is, his disciples are plucking grain on the Sabbath, not the thing you're supposed to do. He's healing a man on the Sabbath, not supposed to do it. And what's the argument? The argument is this man's not observing the Sabbath. And Jesus is saying something stronger. He's saying, not only am I am observing the Sabbath, more importantly, I am fulfilling the promise of the Sabbath. The promise that this man who has a withered hand will be made whole, that all of creation will be made whole. This is the fulfillment of the promise standing right. Now, the story unfolds. This man with the withered hand comes in. The people, the Pharisees, are watching him to see what he does. And it's kind of interesting because it doesn't say whether he'll heal on the Sabbath, or it says whether he will continue to heal on the Sabbath, because apparently he's done this before. He's acted this way before. So they're watching him to see if he'll still do it. And he puts the man with the withered hand right in the middle of the whole thing. And he says, is it right to do good on the Sabbath or harm? To take life or to give life? That is an incredible question. And they don't answer it. And Jesus gets angry. This is the only time in the entire book of Mark that you ever hear Jesus gets angry. I like this anger. I'm familiar with this anger. Yeah, self-righteousness, right? Yeah. I'm an expert. And indeed, it's like, what are we angry about? What kinds of things happen in the world? He grieves their hardness of heart, right? Well, okay, but where is the hardness of heart in our lives that we grieve? I mean, I grieve the incredible violence that's happening in Gaza that continues to happen, and the hardness of heart that allows that to continue to happen, that we are all participating in this hardness of heart, right? So one, the incredible poverty that continues to exist in a world where we are the richest country in the whole world and we can't do anything about getting people out of poverty. Come on. Hardness of heart. I asked somebody the other day, and she said, the thing that breaks my heart the most is these raids on the homeless encampments in Seattle. where they go in, where the people keep people that are homeless, they've made up these camps, tents and everything, and they drive them out. Where are they going to go? Breaks through. It's a hardness of heart that is a part of the world, and it's like, oh my gosh, and it's okay, so let's get angry, and let's really get angry in the same way that here's Jesus and his and the Pharisees that are getting to here in this encounter, and we can pick sides here. One side says Jesus is not the fulfillment of the promise of Sabbath, the promise of deliverance. And our side says, yes, he is. And our side is now going to look at that side who is so hard of heart that they can't see it, and we're going to now say, okay, our faith is going to trump your faith. We are going to put onto you what we believe about Jesus. And that's happening in our culture right now. Okay. But what does Jesus do? He gets angry. And he doesn't say, all right, I'm going to bring 12 legions of angels and I'm going to conquer everything. He doesn't say that at all. In fact, what it says is that he grieved their hardness of heart. He went right from anger to grief, which is beautiful. What a great model for us. Because most of us, we are just going to stay right in anger. We don't want to grieve. We don't want to feel the hurt of that. Anger is so much easier to deal with. In fact, when we have loss and grief, we turn it into anger all the time. And here's Jesus, and he's angry. And he's angry at something important. A lack of compassion, a hardness of heart. And immediately it turns to grief. So that he keeps his heart soft by sorrow. And then he watches not the people who are hard of heart. He doesn't keep his eye on them. He's not. He's just kind of, they're there, and he grieves them. But instead of interacting with them, he looks to the man who is suffering with a withered hand and heals. He brings healing and wholeness and life to the man and to us. The kind of hardness of heart that we see in this story that Jesus grieves, the kind of hardness of heart that is so big that we can name 100 things, that hardness of heart sneaks up on us in small ways. So, yesterday, I was taking the bus home from Wenatchee and sitting there on the bus, and two or three rows back is a guy, and he's just coughing away. You know, I mean, a huge cough. Cough, 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 cough. Hacking. And it's like, oh, that poor guy. Right? Except that wasn't my first thought. My first thought wasn't, oh, that poor guy, he must feel lousy. My first thought was, man, I sure hope he's coughing into a handkerchief or something. Right? What are you doing on a public bus like this, right? You know how those things come, right? They're like that, man. And then I realized, well, thank God I've been thinking about hardness of heart all week, because there it is. Right? I mean, like, holy mackerel, what am I doing? Right? And then it was like, okay, oh, Lord, have mercy on this guy. Lord, have mercy on me and my hardness of heart as well. So it's like we can look at other people's hardness of heart. What we have to really understand is hardness of heart is completely 100% contagious. I'm worried about that guy's cough being contagious. Hardness of heart is contagious. And there I was, inflicted with it. Thankfully, God's anger lasts just for a moment. His grief and compassion last forever. Every time he sees our hardness of heart, he says, oh, come on, no, that's not what I made you for. That's not what I made you. So what am I going to do? I know what I'll do. I'll do what David did. I'll take the holy bread and I'll break it and I'll give it to my companions. Take holy bread and give it to them. And that will begin to transform their hearts. I will take their heart of stone and I will turn a heart of flesh, as it says in Ezekiel. Jesus does this for us in the Holy Eucharist every single week. We come in, we confess our hardness of heart. We are a bit embarrassed by our hardness of heart because we've been thinking about it all week and it sneaks up on us anyway. We receive then this amazing meal, the cup of life and the bread of eternal joy, the bread of compassion, the bread of vulnerable love. Because notice what happens in that story. He heals the man, and what happens? They immediately go out and conspire with the Herodians how to destroy Jesus. In a world where hardness of heart is so contagious, love and compassion have a cost. We must be vulnerable to have compassion. Whether it's the cost of going and seeing this man and asking him how he's doing, or Jesus being faced with the whole world full of hardness of heart, being put on a cross and crucified, destroyed. Is it good to destroy life or to give life? To kill or to give life? And the answer is, it's good to give your life. And I think when Diane was reading this, Second Corinthians thing about carrying the death of Christ in our bodies, I think that's what he's talking about. In order to follow Jesus compassionately and to try as best we can and to receive the help that we need to not have our hearts turned to stone is vulnerable. We must enter into that vulnerability. We must follow Jesus in that vulnerability. And in so many ways, to stand with those who are suffering, to keep our eyes on the compassion is needed, that people need in this world. And there will be plenty of people who will say, it is not right for you to do that. What are you doing? And for us, we'll have to say, we can't help it. We ate the bread of life. We drank the cup of salvation. This is who we are. If Grace, if you'd be willing to do this, we're going to sing, you all know this, most of you know this, I will take your heart of stone and fill it with my spirit. I'll bring you back. I'll give you back a heart of flesh and fill you with your spirit, with my spirit. I think the words of that might be, what's that? I think it's on the, in the back of your book, there's a, number 12 in this little insert in the back of your hymnal. And we'll sing it through three times.